The limits of debate in this country are established before the debate even begins, and everyone else is marginalized. They're made to seem either to be communists or some sort of disloyal person. A kook, there's a word.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
And now it's conspiracy. See, they've made that something that should not be even entertained for a minute, that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff.
It's funny in a sense that you were saying that about how they met and shit, because I think I mentioned this to somebody before, but it's like, part of me, hindsight being 2020, it's like when he first announced he was running for president, it seemed like he would do any rinky-dink fucking morning radio show out there just to, because he had nothing better to do, and he was now running for president, and that's what he knew, you know, to go on these shows and promote shit. And it's like, I just, hindsight being 2020, I just wish I just got him on the show. I wish I just tried. I'm like, holy shit, Donald Trump's running for president, I ought to interview him and see what he has to say, you know?
Yeah, he was on Alex Jones early on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So a few times. Yeah, that's the whole thing, is Alex. Well, that's what I was going to say. It's really when I started to say it's amazing. As I said before, you've been in this long time, I have too. It's like, I remember Alex Jones when he was sort of, when he was like the garage band, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And now, you know, I mean, last summer he was getting slammed by Obama and Hillary and shit. It's like, holy shit, dude. This guy,
I think
he's done more than anyone in the paranormal I can recall, in a sense.
I think they made a mistake by actually saying his name and giving him that free publicity.
Yeah, and that, like, credibility, if you're slammed by Obama, it means you're important, I guess. So it's like, you know, when you're slammed by the president, it's pretty, it's not as cool as, you know, getting lauded by the president. But I guess if you gotta get settled for something, I guess getting slammed by the president is pretty good, too.
It happened with Bill Cooper back in the day.
Really?
Remember, yeah, you know, back in the early 90s when he came on the scene, he had his shortwave radio show, and he was really the anti-government stuff, and yeah, come and try to take my gun away, and I'm not going to pay taxes. Eventually, he had a run-in with the cops and ended up getting in a altercation and they getting killed, but at one point, you know, he was really railing against Clinton, whatever, and in some speech, Clinton named him during that period, which is kind of, you know, once again, more publicity and more of a reason for Cooper to say, I'm being persecuted by Clinton,
yeah,
take away our guns and all that. And that was during the period where, you know, they had the assault rifle ban going on, so, you know, Clinton was despised by that whole militia scene, Second Amendment advocates.
Well, that's interesting. Well, the evolution of Alex Jones is particularly intriguing in a sense, where it's like, to me, it just seems like he became famous, and he liked being famous more than sort of undermining the system which made him famous at that point. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense, he's like he became famous, and it's like, if I upend society, I won't be famous anymore.
Well, he might have got compromised along the way too, but when he started out, his claim to fame was he got involved in, you know, the Waco.
Yeah, that was his bailiwick when he first started out. Yeah,
he helped them. He raised money and helped them rebuild that church, you know. So when became a figure and started like the show in his garage or whatever, and grew over time. But you got to ask, you know, did he have some a hidden hand behind the scenes, funneling money into and saying, oh, Alex, we love you. Here's $15,000 through PayPal. And also, I have intelligence sources in Europe that are saying something about whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you could mention that on the show, and I'll have more inside information for you, and I'll try to give you some PayPal money every month because you're doing a wonderful job enlightening the masses.
Jesus.
See where I'm, see where I'm going with this?
That would pay for a lot of groceries.
Yeah, so the finish up with this Russian influence stuff, you know, the targets of Alex Jones are the usual Hillary, Obama, whoever
wishes,
New World Order. One of them is George Soros.
Oh, yeah. He's another, another character. Another, you know, one. All the characters in this. Yeah.
Yeah. A few years back, it's like, who the... I kind of knew who he was, but it's like all of a sudden he's the demon guy, and it, you know, it turns out
he's one of the supervillains. Yeah.
Putin doesn't like him either. Around the time that these memes started with Soros is when Putin and Soros had a falling out, just like Putin and Hillary did when she you know, challenged him on the elections in Russia that they were quote-unquote rigged. And so that's around that time when all, a lot of those George Soros memes started.
Now, what do you think of this? Because I sometimes I get the sense that this is the argument of the...
Wait a minute. Let me, before we go on...
Did I cut you off before the end of this train of thought?
No, but I thought something. I need to finish up something. Yeah, George Soros is—he's like a lot of these rich guys. He's done some good things, some sketchy things, you know, manipulating currency. But you know, he's also did human rights stuff. But he's, you know, seen as a globalist, New World Order type deal,
right.
And all the humanitarian efforts are basically to enslave us all and whatever. It's not good for Americans.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. That's the point. In a sense, I wanted to make. Like, the rationale I seem to get from the Trump folks, the Trump fans, aside from the people that are just like fuck everything, let's just blow the whole thing up, is like, the people like in the conspiracy sort of realm. I think, like, if you asked, like, an Alex Jonesian character or the people who support that sort of idea, is that, like, that Trump and his cohorts are they're toppling, their goal is to topple this global New World Order. And so we should just let them do their shit, you know, that we're idiots, that we want the Illuminati to take over. We just want to be sheeple by not supporting the overthrow of the New World Order via Trump. I think that's their argument.
Oh, I think they've been suckered, you know. It's like, it's a money grab. Same thing with all the, you know, Trump's kind of a wannabe oligarch, you know.
And I hear what you're saying.
Who knows how much money Trump is really worth if he's, you know, maybe he's totally owned.
right.
We don't know.
Let me advance this argument in a sense too, where it's like, maybe that very well may be true, but it's like maybe there's a reason why these people have been excluded from the New World Order because they're like no good. So we don't want them to overthrow the New World Order. They weren't good enough to make it into the New World Order. We don't want them running the world.
That's
you know?
Kind of the deal. It's an elitist thing, and I think Trump is, you know, from what I've read about him, he's always kind of looked down upon by these other billionaires and globalists or whatever. He's kind of he's a wannabe. He'd like to be in that community. Never quite there because he doesn't have the social skills and the intellectual curiosity. He's just a weird freaking dude. But as far as, you know, the theory of being owned, you got to keep in mind that he went bankrupt several times.
Oh, yeah.
And banks in the U.S. didn't want to have anything to do with him anymore because he wouldn't pay, you know, back his loans. He'd sue whoever that challenged that, and so he got propped up by Deutsche Bank, you know, a decade ago. He had to go out of the U.S., and that's one of those banks that's got called on the carpet for money laundering and is, you know, connected to Kremlins and oligarchs and shady characters. So about a decade ago, he owed $50 million. Was it $50 million? I think it might
be a considerable sum.
Yeah, it was $50 million. And he wasn't making his payments or whatever. He'd blown them off. And so all of a sudden that kind of disappeared at one point. Here I'm going off on another angle here, but one of the vice presidents there was a guy named Ribolov. You familiar with his name?
Yeah. I'm not familiar with Ribolov.
Okay.
I wouldn't remember a name like that.
I kind of got the pronunciation right, but Deutsche Bank ended up having fines against them. The U.S. Government sued them for $680 million, and they paid the U.S. government, and actually Russia sued them for $5,000. That's probably like a wink and nod, you know?
$5,000, wow.
And so, follow me here, this Ribolov guy, he was like one of the main guys in the bank, vice president or whatever. Next, he moved to Cyprus Bank.
Yeah.
You've heard Cyprus. Cyprus is like the main money laundering that totally tied in with all these shady Russian mobsters and oligarchs and stuff. So this Ribolov is the guy who bought Trump's property in Florida.
Okay, now I'm catching up with you now. Yeah, I know about that. Yeah,
it's a 30.
They bought it for like way more than it was worth, or something like that. Yeah.
For $100 million, it was. Trump bought it for like $30 million. He never did anything. The place is like totally gaudy, even for Trump. You know, it's And so this guy bought it for $100 million, and he never did anything with it either. He was going through a divorce at that time, so it was pretty clear he was trying to stash money everywhere. You know, and
yeah.
So. And you start looking into these finances for Trump and Manafort, and they're all tied in with these Russian oligarchs and mobsters. It's like, I'm sure they're looking at that money. So he got $100 million went into that. And where'd it go from there? Was that part of the deal? Hey, we'll take care of your $50 million loan through Deutsche Bank, but you take this $100 million and you feed it into all these different, your shell companies, and then from those shell companies you pay me back into my shell companies. It's just a maze with all, you know, all the stuff that goes on. A lot of this is coming out now in these Paradise Papers, but we kind of beat Trump to death. I'm sure people get tired of this stuff or worn out.
Yeah, they're writing up some meanness now, I'm sure. Well, I was going to mention Pizzagate, but I don't even know if we should get into that. That's just fucking weird. I never even talk. We don't really talk about that. I've kind of worn out on conspiracies in a sense. Just I like the Trump-Russia one, and I kind of like the volleys back from the other side, but I don't like when you get deeper into it when it's like false flag and you know, this thing where it's like, oh, they're actors, crisis actors. This shit's like so fucking lame. To me, it's
everything's crisis actor, yeah.
Yeah.
Any event now, yeah, there's crisis actors. There was crisis actors in Las Vegas and on and on and on, any major. I'll say when the Pizzagate stuff came out, it was like, oh, man, I've heard this whole narrative before. Back in the early 90s, there was a mind control, what is it, the Kathy O'Brien book, Transformation of America, and it featured Hillary Clinton in there is like a satanic lesbian. You know, this story's been going on for a while, and they get recycled. And also, oh, back in that period, you had the satanic panic with the underground tunnels at a school for children, and they were taking the children in these underground tunnels and molesting them. This was in California.
It's like California, right?
Yeah, I'm forgetting the name of it, but all these elements were there in the Pizzagate story. And you had the people pushing it, or all these alt-right guys that seemed to be connected to the whole Roger Stone nexus of things. So it smelt funky to me from the get-go, and some people that I've considered or, you know, have half a brain buy into that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Same here, actually. Yeah, I've talked to friends of mine who really believe it, and it's like, you know, it's quite the rabbit hole to go down. It seems a little bit talk like the satanic panic. I mean, talk about panic. It's hysteria in a sense. I don't find it very believable at all.
I looked at the you know the Instagram stuff and whatever. It's like, yeah, it's not
right, exactly.
Yeah,
I gave it a look, and I was just kind of like, I don't really see. Yeah, it's the McMartin preschool. That's what somebody, Steve Ray, our friend Steve Ray, mm-hmm. he's fact-checking for us. He also mentioned, since I know he'll appreciate it, he mentioned that Paddock was into video poker, which is essentially slot machines, while Blitzerian is into real poker. Both work for money laundering, though. So there you go. Well, can we correct the record here?
Yep.
I was going to mention also the front. Franklin cover-up from that time, too, is a big thing that gets mentioned a lot.
And, you know, at all of these, there's an element of, there's some factual element, you know, and that's part of the design for influence campaigns, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was some truth to the Uranium-1. There's some truth to Pizzagate to the extent that there was some emails that got leaked that belonged to Podesta, so that you know you start from something that's factual, and you build your conspiracy theory from that, and so you can go back to those original emails, or you can go back to a New York Times story on Uranium-1 or whatever.
Right, exactly.
They use that model of having, it's not totally out of whole cloth, there's some factual elements, and the same thing with the whole pedophilia thing. It's been going on in Hollywood for a while, and I'm seeing, you know, the stories are coming out now, and whoever, Louis C.K. or whatever, and I see people say, that proves Pizzagate right there, every time George Takei or whoever gets accused of
crazy.
It's just the time, you know, victims are feeling empowered because other people are, you know, it's coming out. It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, I think so. Some people have say that, like somebody in the chat room suggested that it was like that this is orchestrated to get back at Hollywood by, you know, I guess Trump and his minions. But to me, it's like, the whole thing broke in the Washington Post or the New York Times or whatever. I thought they were fake news. So
yeah.
So,
well, it's like, when it works, when the fake news works for them, then, it's real news.
Then it's real news.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating part of it, dude. You can't call someplace fake news and then cite them, like, the next day and be like,
yeah.
That happens way too much.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, Well, it was just weird after, the election, because people started freaking out and coming up with all kinds of conspiracy theories. So we'll see what happens. You're right. We should move on from that. Let me see.
I want to say, there is that conspiracy theory, though. I've heard that like Rupert Murdoch is fleshing out all these Hollywood celebrities because they know something's about to drop on Trump. It's similar.
Oh, I see.
And there's always been those. I mean, there's some
pee-pee tape.
But, well, I mean, there's a criminal complaint against Trump and Epstein. It, you know, it's like a real thing.
I know about that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Bill Clinton's like mixed up in it too. That's the whole
Clinton
hilarious twist of it.
A lot of people are Epstein's buddies, and they, you know, flew on his jet, and he likes girls. Trump has even said that in an old interview. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Yeah, he likes the young ones. Talking about Epstein.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people involved in that network.
That's an interesting theory, though, that, like, they're priming the pump. They're getting people ready.
But by the time we get there, it's like, yeah, so what, he did such and such. So
yeah.
Did he.
So did George Takei. So, who are we
now,
to judge?
To be fair to George Takei, there's only been, as far as I know, one accusation against him, and it hasn't been confirmed. So you got to be careful when it's like.
I think there's two now, but I'm not positive about them.
Obviously, C.K. admitted in this Weinstein, that guy's a piece of work, and Judge Roy Moore.
Oh, geez, yeah. Well, maybe that, yeah, who knows? It's just crazy. It's really, you know, it's just crazy.
Buckle up.
It's just crazy.
You got to buckle up.
Yeah.
And write this out.
I hope so. I hope so, man. It's a crazy time to be living in right now.
I'm kind of surprised about hearing these guys, like when the Cosby stuff came out. But when you look at it, you know, these guys are twisted. It's more about power, you know. I mean, they're perverts or whatever, but it's more about power sometimes than it is the sex.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. They're just super rich. They're super powerful people that, you know, that this is. It's kind of like what they always talk about in the conspiracy world, where it's like, they murder people because they can, because it thrills them, because they're super rich. It's like,
yeah,
you're crazy. But then more shit comes out, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. I could plausibly see how the super rich would have an island where they hunt people. Like, this isn't that far-fetched at all anymore.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, man. Makes me glad I'm poor and unfamous. So...
After that movie comes out, we'll see. The offers are going to start pouring in.
Yeah, let's hope so. I told you, spinoff movie, where you and I have to, like, some kind of, what's that? What's that, Dan Brown? Like that code, Da Vinci Code. Hill in the Hole, too, yeah, exactly.
I just came up with that vibe.
Now... I hate, we've already beaten the Trump thing to death, so we'll move to something that has also been beaten to death in a sense, but I find that you have a wisdom that that cuts against the grain and sees these things from a depth that others don't. So what do you make of this Tom DeLonge thing? You've seen this dog and pony show plenty of times,
mm-hmm.
But is that pretty much all it is? Or you think there's some kind of like, do you think something else there to it? Some meat on the bone or something.
I'm not impressed. I would, let's say, first off, when I heard elements of the story, well, yeah, this sounds like the same thing we've heard before with a number of people who've got kind of sucked into it. And I don't know if he's being manipulated or what exactly, but you see some of the same names, actually, you know, some of the people who were part of the aviary. Part of what's he call it? To the Stars. Peter Lavenda's wrapped up in this, and he's been a myth maker for many years.
It's disputed, but like, isn't the idea that he is Simon who wrote the Necronomicon?
That's been pretty well established, but he doesn't want to actually.
Admit it.
Up to it for some weird reason. There's a great interview that Ian Punnett, was it Ian Punnett? Yeah.
We're going to read Simon, right?
Well, he interviewed Lavenda, and he basically pinned him down on that, and Lavenda was totally squirrely about the whole thing. And, Ian Punnett wasn't going for it. That might be something to listen to if you can find it on YouTube. But I just, and, you know, they're weaving in these WikiLeaks emails. You know about that part of the story, right?
Yeah. WikiLeaks emails with they're weaving. We pivoted from one to the other. So yes, they're weaving in the Podesta emails that said like he was that he would talk to DeLong or something, right?
Yeah, and I heard Lavinda talking about this, and it was like things got escalated. You know, it was like that was like a big event that all of a sudden we were worried about our sources and methods. And so I'm listening to the interview, and I look at the emails. It's like, they're just using that as to bring some drama into it. The emails looked like it was, you know, he's contacting Podesta to basically promote what he was doing with To the Stars, you know, and he makes a lot of heavy weather about he's working with former people with the DOD and former CIA agents, you know, that are part of the team. And it's like, so what? There's a lot there's a lot of those dudes out there. That doesn't mean
yeah, exactly.
And then lastly, I heard him, I'm being pretty unkind to the guy, but I think it's, you know, it's a whole lot of nothing. I heard him on Joe Rogan.
Yeah, I heard that was quite the disastrous interview. I haven't had a chance to hear it, but everyone's talking about
it. Yeah, he's not, he doesn't impress me at all. I listened to about 2 minutes, and it's like, enough of this clown. So.
Yeah.
Pretty hard words, but, you know, that was my impression.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it seems like a big dog and pony
show. What the hell do I know? But I could be wrong. But then, you know, as he's been rolling this thing out, it's like they're going to have some big reveal or something, you know, and it's like, whatever. This is the next be witness, you know, with the...
Right, right.
It's like, yeah. Not expecting anything, and from what I heard, it was like, yeah, a bunch of nothing. It's like, what is the deal? This is like a project that's going to go on over a number of years, and there's going to be books and movies and this and that, and over time, we're going to reveal what's, hey, man, if you got some damn secret that you're going to reveal, then reveal it, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird like that, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, when they mix the entertainment in, it makes it kind of shady.
That too. We've seen this before. You know, it was the same thing with kind of coming from a different angle with Bill Moore than Linda Moulton Howe. They were promised a lot of things, and at the last minute, they get it pulled away from them. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They were going to be shown or given footage and stuff to show the public, to put into a movie. Yeah, that was the whole story, like in the 80s, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was
And he might be being led down that same path. He's being promised stuff, so maybe that's why they're rolling it out like that. Book 3 of Secret or whatever it is will make available the actual saucer landing or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Then there'll be the paradigm shift, and that'll be the year 2035 or whatever.
and putting myself in his shoes in a sense, where it's like, because one of the arguments is that he's been looking at this topic for a long time. He knows this whole game and shit. But
I don't know. A lot of people have been watching. Well, I've been watching Ancient Aliens for 10 years now, and I've read a couple some books and shit.
Why? Why? I guess the point being that to put myself in his shoes, it's like if people say, how can you be fooled by this and shit? But it's like, what if they, in a hypothetical situation, like what if they just took him and they were like, all right, dude, you know, come to this Air Force base in California, whatever, and they showed him a bunch of shit. They're like, we can't give it to you yet, or you can't show it to anybody else or anything. It's your work, you know. So that's why he's all coy about stuff and also why he goes along. And you know, the shit could be movie props. Like, so I'm not saying that anyone showed him anything actually interstellar either. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, they could bring him in and show him some CGI movie and be like, this is a real UFO. We captured it, you know, but you can't tell anybody. So he thinks he's in on it, in a sense. I kind of think that might be what's, because why else would anybody go along with it unless they were shown something that they believe is real and that they'll be able to show people?
Yeah. And,
you know,
I've heard, you know, some of the descriptions of stuff early on. He was meeting with different people in the military and whatever, and I could visualize. Yeah, he set up meetings with these guys because he wants to find out about UFOs, and meets with some people in military intelligence, much like the aviary, people who are interested about this stuff, and some of them know a little something. Well, yeah, there, you know, they've heard reports of craft and other things going on. So he's mingling with these people on the fringes of the military intelligence who also think there's more to the story, but they're all, you know, searching for answers, and they have little pieces of information here and there, but nothing that, you know, is like a great revelation.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I feel like I think that it's, you know, nothing's going to come of it. So
no.
If anything, I could see them being like, when the rubber hits the road, being like, all right, dude, we can't give you any of this shit, but you can tell people that we did this to you. And that'll be the big revelation eventually. He's like, they took me to an Air Force base, they showed me this shit, and then they... You know, same as the stories we've heard, same as how the other ones played out.
Well, this is like going to be a project that's going on for a number of years, right?
I'm sure that's what they envision, but, you know.
Yeah, that's the plan. So now, 5 years from now, the people who are signing on from now or the people who are calling bullshit, there's going to be another audience that comes along. So, you know, they could milk this out for years and years. It's like, why are the Ghost Hunter shows still going on? They're all the same, right?
That's true. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, he's trying to generate sort of like a self-perpetuating entertainment brand, really.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense, but I mean, you know, to me it's like, why the fuck would you do it with UFOs, dude? if you want to do that, man, like, make a comic book or some shit.
Well, he very well might believe in all of this as well. Totally.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure, you know, I'd like to think at the end of the day he's not, like, a bad person. As much as I dump on him on the show, too, you know?
I don't think he is. I don't think he's necessarily a con man.
No. If anything, he's probably like the opposite, in a sense, like, where if you come from that world, you probably think everybody's a con man, so you're fucking... everything's a con. You know what I mean?
He seemed a little naive to me on the Rogan interview, and... sounds a little harsh, but kind of a simpleton, too.
I mean, he's
a rock star or whatever, and people are impressed by that. So, and you're reaching a kind of a new audience, bringing in that generation, millennial hipsters. You look at people in ufology now, it's all a bunch of old fogies. Stanton
yeah,
Friedman,
that's for sure.
On and on. I mean, God bless Stanton Friedman or whoever, but, you know, all the names... Stephen Bassett, Stephen Greer.
Yeah, it's like an old-timers club.
Yeah.
And even the people that seem young, like Rich Dolan's, like, he's been around for forever, too. So it's like, you know, like
tired,
Peter Robbins, Rich Dolan.
If you go into a UFO conference, you've heard all this stuff before. I mean, you've been around for a while. There's usually nothing... groundbreaking. The people at a lot of the conferences are usually pretty older too, and it's more like they're going to see their
old friends.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you've been to a few of these, you not only have you heard all the stuff, you've met these people probably several times. So it's, mm-hmm. it's like you may even be on friendly terms with them if you've been to like three or four of these conferences. So, and God bless them. That's how intimate the community is in a sense.
But if you go to a conference nowadays, I haven't been one for a couple of years, it's like I'm going there to hang out with somebody. I'll take in, go in and watch, okay, Rich Dolan, I'll check out what he's saying after 10 minutes. Oh, man, getting a little tired here in my seat. I'll go cocktail lounge or whatever.
Yeah, I can't sit still with those things either.
It's
a tough slog, yeah. I that's why I'm like fidgety at the Paramania ones we do. I'm like, I got to get out of here, man. This is supposed to be a party.
Oh.
Oh, man. Tell me about this Contactees book you're working on with Greg Bishop. I don't want to be – just talk about it. I've heard a little bit about it, but I'm afraid I don't want to spoil things. So
okay.
Tell me about it.
Man, this has been going on for a while. I think around 2011, I came across some photos. You know Joe Fex? Have you had him on your show?
Yeah, I had him on a long, long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know of Joe Fex.
So he is a,
he had some wild stuff back then.
Yeah. He's involved in, he's an interesting guy, but he's also a, interested in photos. He's kind of a historian of acquiring photo collections and preserving the material. And one collection he came across, it's called the Beck Collection. This guy named Robert Beck, and if you look on Wikipedia, he was quite an interesting character in himself. Robert Beck is probably the father of... you're about, like, if you've listened to Jeff Rintz in recent years, Royal Rife, and familiar with the different machines that can prolong your life and using frequencies or whatever. Bob Beck was big time into that. He's kind of the father of a lot of that stuff that Jeff Rintz talks about nowadays.
I'm still amazed you're listening to Jeff Rentz. Like, I haven't listened to Jeff Rentz in like a...
Well, I'm talking, you know, a year or two ago. You'd always hear about
the stuff. Ads. So, he had ads for the Royal Rife shit that he was selling or something, I thought. Because I remember having that name drilled into my head every time they went to a commercial.
So Bob Beck came up with, like, what am I thinking of here, the... there's a therapy you'll hear on Jeff Rentz all the time. I could open up the document here, and if I said the catchphrase, you know, oh, I've heard that advertised on Jeff Rentz. Anyway, that was Bob Beck. He was into all this stuff, but he was also a photographer, and he went out to these contactee happenings back in the day and took all these photos of these old-school contactees. And I heard about this collection that Joe Fex had, and him and another friend of mine put out a Lulu book that featured all these photos, but the book was kind of crap. It was in black and white, and the photos really weren't didn't show up that well, you know, and I think they told me later I was like the only one who bought the book, and there was just labels on the photos. This is such and such contacting and whatever. But anyway, it was a great photo collection. I thought this would make a great book, having these photos and kind of creating a who's who of the contactees from Adamski to on down the line to Van Tassel, et cetera. They're in a lot of these photos. They're all photos of giant rock in this collection. A lot of cool shit. So I got a hold of Joe Fex, and we swung a deal so I could use him in a book. And the idea, this would be like a contactee who's who. And I thought of Greg Bishop.
Greg's perfect for it, yeah.
Yeah, he turned me on to a lot of this stuff. So, God, we talked about this. We went out to New Orleans in 2012, and agreed to do the book, and so 5 years later, we're getting close to completing it. I think it's unique. I can't think of any book quite like it that delves deeply into the old school contactees as opposed to the abductees. There's been, like, Aaron Golias has done a book on contactees, but he just focuses on a handful, and Redford did a book, but it was kind of a mix of old and new. This is more dedicated to the all the old school guys from back in the day with a bunch of great photos to enhance it all.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like it's almost as much visual as it is as text, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can go into the text, and typically the word count for each entry is somewhere between 800 words. Some are maybe 1,500 words. Some maybe a little shorter. So, and, you know, there's like 50 contactees in there maybe. So
oh,
wow. It's kind of like a who's who. Some of them are the better-known guys like Adamski and Van Tassel and George Hunt Williamson. There's some ones you probably never heard of whose stories are just as crazy as any of the other more well-known contactees.
Yeah. Interesting. And when's that supposed to be coming out?
Next year, like most likely.
Nice.
Yeah, it'll be out next year sometime.
All right. I will look for it. You'll obviously let us know anyway, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure. Yeah.
Indeed. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you got it. There seems to be a delay. I don't know if it's this new phone or if it's a different way I'm doing the show, but go ahead. I'm sorry. We had the same problem last week.
I don't have a delay on my end. So that's unfortunate, but I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, see, there you go. Well, luckily, Steve Ray sent in a question that I told him I would ask if we had a moment, and I figure we can now. He says he wants to know your thoughts on predictive programming. Are you familiar with this idea?
Yeah.
All right, good. So I don't have to explain it. So I guess he just says that it's a way of hypnotizing the public into imitating movie stars. But I'm sure you have more to say about it. So talk about what you think about predictive programming, because I found it interesting.
Well, James Shelby Downard was kind of his thing, that they through using films and pop culture and popular literature, that they were basically kind of programming society for these forthcoming events, you know, like you'll see the 9/11 stuff, for instance, right? You've seen some of
yeah.
that, like music albums, or what was the precursor, or it was a spinoff of the X-Files, the Lone Gunman.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Was,
oh,
that
with
was
the 9/11 thing, yeah.
Yeah, that was part of the predictive programming thing, was basically to condition society as a whole when these major events come, that by the time they happen, they'd be so inundated with a lot of these imagery that they would accept these things as acceptable to, you know, current-day reality, much like the Matrix we're living through right now. That's kind of a crude description of it. There was a guy named, remember Kentroversy? Kent Benson?
Yes, I had him on the show. He passed away.
Yeah, quite a few years ago he died of AIDS, and I had him. He was big into the predictive programming stuff.
Yeah, it was like Benkowski or something, right, his name?
Mm-hmm.
Kent, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kentroversy. God rest his soul. Yeah, he had some wild ideas. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. People point out shit like that all the time. You know, the whole night. There's actually a commercial with Trump doing like a Sleep Number mattress, and he's like, or something, or a hotel or something, where he walks past the sheep. Have you seen this?
Trump?
Yes, it's an old commercial Trump did for like a mattress brand, And he's walking down like a hotel hallway, and there's sheep like at the doors because they don't need them anymore because they don't need to count sheep, right? And Trump is, because the numbers on the thing go alternately or whatever, it's like Trump goes through and it says 9/11 with Trump in the middle of it. Yeah. And it's like, what the fuck, man? That's crazy. So
well, it's like on The Simpsons. Supposedly, they did predictive programming where Trump was riding down the escalator in an old episode of, The Simpsons. And that's one of those memes that got spread around the internet. But as it turns out, it was kind of it was made after the fact, but it's being presented like, you know, more predictive programming.
Right, right.
So you got to separate the BS predictive programming stories from, you know, the quote-unquote real ones. There was a lot of album covers, you've probably seen those, that had images of 9/11 on them.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-9/11. So that's predictive programming, I guess, in a nutshell, as best as I can describe it. Basically conditioning people to prepare them for these mass events, I guess, and make them more acceptable, you know.
We talked about that earlier with the Hollywood sex scandal thing. So.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah, I guess that would be considered, you could consider it predictive programming.
Yeah. It just makes you, but like you said, you got to be careful what you dive into, in a sense. Do you remember the thing like after 9/11 where it was like you could fold one of the old $20 bills a certain way and it would like look just like 9/11 or something? It was like, A, I don't know who the fuck figured that out, and B, like, I found it hard to believe that they designed the back of the $20 bill like decades earlier so that it would show 9/11 like that to me stretches the imagination, you know? But it's still, so it makes you wonder, like, who the fuck found this? And, and like, does it mean anything? Does it really mean anything? I don't know. It's spooky.
Maybe not. Who knows? I know if you start looking for things, you'll find them, you know, like the whole 23 Enigma or the whole 11/11 thing. You know, and I don't know if it's so much that you look at how many times a day you look at a clock throughout the course of a year, you know, and what
right,
the week score. Yeah.
It's, in a way, it's like a high, if you think about it, it's like it's a high traffic time of day, too, in a sense. It's like it's right before bed and it's right before lunch, so you're more likely to look at the clock, you know, to see if it's noon or midnight yet.
And now you look at the clock and it's 2:13, well, yeah. You look at the clock and it's 3:55. And
right. The 6:17. One time to catch it is 11:11. Yeah.
And it's 11:11. Whoa.
Oh, Steve mentioned something here. We're getting near the end, but I feel like we can cover it. And it feels like it's like right in your wheelhouse. It's like this whole phenomenon of like targeted individuals. Like people who say that they're like the victim of like gang stalkers and like just, harassment, like weird electronic harassment and shit. Have you looked into this at all? Like, what do you get out of that stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy too, man. I mean, there's some compelling stories about people think they're being microwaved or buzzed by, you know, some type of stuff. Yeah. You look at a weird story is that one in the American Embassy in Cuba.
Yeah, that one's
learning
really weird.
More and more about that. I haven't looked into that too deeply, but that's kind of a weird thing. I mean, that would fall into a target individual thing. You know, who's doing that?
Right.
Some of these stories are. They call it, like, gang stalking, and it's not necessarily the government doing it or intelligence agencies. It's some rogue group that's going around and putting voices in people's heads, you know. So you got to separate all the craziness, too. I mean, people hear voices in their heads that are like paranoid schizophrenics, you know, and so, how much of these are real stories or whatever. You know, I've had some kind of weird experiences personally, you know, that where I thought I was being buzzed at one time or another, but it's hard to say.
Yeah.
There's a great book called Camellio. You have that guy in your show?
No, but I've heard that book mentioned a few times lately.
Oh, he's brilliant. It's a brilliant book. And it's kind of a... it happened post 9/11, and which time we got left here. It is really. I'd recommend people to check that book out. That's a good example of that kind of targeted harassment with sophisticated technology. You know, that's pretty compelling. There's a lot of. I'm forgetting the author's name, but...
Is it a real story, or is it like a fictional story?
No, totally real story. It'll blow your mind.
Wow.
We don't have...
I'll check it out.
...time to get into it.
What's that?
There's no time to get into it with 5 minutes left to...
Yeah. Well, it's some other dude's book, so we don't know really much. It's like, yeah, we should really talk to this guy. So, all right, I guess we'll sort of winding it down here. Is there any predictive programming in the Hill in the Hole? Steve wants to know.
I haven't given that too much thought. I guess we'll find out.
There you go. I know. We'll have to look for it now. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of what do they call them? What's the phrase? Eggs? Easter eggs?
Oh, Easter eggs.
Yeah. All kinds of winks and nods with dealing with Fortiana.
Oh, that's my favorite kind of... I love that shit.
You'll see a few in the movie.
Nice. Well, it was fun making it, man. I had a blast. I can't... You got me into the movie, so I owe you for that, for sure.
Oh, well, the directors wanted you because they were a fan. They just wanted to meet you, so.
Well, they put me in the movie, and it was awesome. Now, as I was joking with you on the set, once the movie is screened in the theater, we can be in consideration for Oscars.
Mm-hmm. We're under Oscar consideration, yeah.
Yeah. And considering the way things are going in Hollywood, we may be the only ones left by the time the Oscars come around, so. We may have a shot. Our odds are increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aside from the contact, so do you have a podcast now or something too? What else can we plug here as I let you go? Is there anything else you want people to follow you on Twitter? Follow me on Twitter. We have the best exchanges in all of Twitter, I think.
In the history of Twitter, yeah. Now with 280 characters, my God. There's no limits to what we can do.
What do you think of that, actually? Because you're an avid Twitterer, and I've really gotten into it in the last 6 months. I really love it. But
I think they should have kept it at, what was the 140?
Yeah, or at least just incrementally increase it. Don't double it. Like, maybe just go to 200.
It seems a bit much, but we'll see. It's one of those things, you know, people are resistant to change, so maybe in a year or so, it's like, oh, this is what it is. We like this now.
You know what it'll be? The classic thing where it's like, could you imagine having to do this with 140 characters?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'll be like old-timers, you know? We'll be like, Twitter's with 140 characters. Man.
But yes, I am doing a podcast, but I haven't done it recently. I'm taking like a hiatus. I let Smiles Lewis know because he started running it on his Anomaly Network, basically because I had to finish up some book projects. So I'll do more of it. It's called Radio Go-Go. And it's either interviews or a lot of it, some old audio I have that I put up with some commentary. But I have, there'll be some stuff coming up. I've done a few interviews. Been working on this, finishing up this UFO disinformation book. So I, for instance, killed two birds with one stone, you know, people I want to interview for the book, like Mark Pilkington, if you had him on.
Oh, yeah. No, we never had him on the show, but I know who he is.
Okay, yeah, so I interviewed him recently because I had some questions about Serpo. He was totally into the Serpo thing for this UFO disinformation book. So,
I remember Serpo, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that's content for the book, but since I did the interview with him, I'll edit the thing and post it as a podcast. A lot of times you're just interviewing somebody for a book, so it's kind of freewheeling, and there's stuff you got to edit, and I get pretty deep into the editing, so this section here needs to be in a before another section, so move things around, so there's chronology. And so anyway, what I'm saying, sometimes I get into the editing of it and it takes a while to finally get it, you know, into a form where I'm going to put it out as a podcast.
Yeah. Alright.
Much
interesting.
You know, different approach than what you do or a lot of podcasters.
So what, a lot of bells and whistles, you mean?
Not a lot of bells and whistles, though, but just going through, like, editing a manuscript, you know?
I hear you. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I used to, like, really fastidiously edit the shows back when we pre-taped them, but once we started going live, I pretty much just try to turn them out
It's a live show. That makes it easier. Just do it and put it out there. Don't worry about the...
Yeah.
Going back.
Well, the British nanny is here, so she's telling us to go to bed.
Okay.
So, so AdamGoReilly.com is the website?
Sure, why not?
There you go. And Adam GoReilly on Twitter, at Adam GoReilly. Folks, follow Adam and me. This whole show's been, the purpose is for more people to follow Adam and I on Twitter and get tuned into the insane ramblings.
Yeah,
there was
somebody, I'm forgetting the person's name, posted, well, you made my day, you and Banal going off on whatever you were going off, and I commented to him, I'm a little worried about you that you understand our humor, but...
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like I said, many days it's the highlight of my day. So I will, I'll see you on Twitter probably later tonight, man. And thank you for doing the show. And I love you, man. I really do. The movie, you got me in a fucking movie. You were the eighth guest we ever had on the show. I mean, we've gone back, you know, over a decade now. So
I
can't put you over enough. I hope I see you in New Orleans, I hope. At Paramania, and if not, in New England for the premiere of The Hill in the Hole.
Right on.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks, man.
My pleasure, buddy.
Yeah.
There you go, folks. Adam GoReilly, the living legend himself. I can't thank him enough. It was awesome having him on the show. Like I said, I got into this weird foot-dragging thing here after Halloween where it was like, it's time to crack open the vault here and bring in some of the long time guests on the show, and Adam was on the top of the list. So and that's the perfect segue to the question I've been getting from countless people to a frightening level over the last week or so, probably since the Halloween show, or maybe when I announced there was a Halloween show, but it's getting over and over again, people asking about Ruxgiving. Is there going to be a Ruxgiving? And of course there's going to be a Ruxgiving. So that's next Tuesday night, 9 p.m., the holiday tradition like no other. Bruce Rux back for the annual Thanksgiving special. I can hear the folks cheering now. And I'll say this at the beginning of the show, a spoiler for the people who listen all the way to the end. I'm hoping, even though we're wrapping up season 10, I'm pretty much banking on there still being a holiday special, after season 10, both Ruxgiving and the holiday special with Stan Friedman, probably the year in review with Greg Bishop, too. So I think those three, the trio of holiday specials, are going to continue into the future beyond season 10. So do not cry that this is the last Ruxgiving, because there will presumably be a Ruxgiving 2018, 19, 20, however long Bruce and I want to keep chatting about this shit. So that's the good news. That's next week, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving at 9 p.m. I don't have the specific date in front of me. What's today? The 14th, so I guess the 21st, Tuesday the 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Ruxgiving 2017. Oh, that's the other thing. Send your questions. Send your questions for Bruce Rux. So info@banalofamerica.com, or just hit me up on Facebook, banalofamerica.com, the page on there, or as was the point of this surreptitious clandestine program, follow me on Twitter, and follow Adam Gorelli on Twitter too. and send me your questions on there if you want. So I guess I'll put a post there and post on Facebook and all that good stuff, so people can put them in one long chain and I can read them easier. But, yeah, questions for Bruce Rux, the holiday tradition like no other, Ruxgiving 2017. Next week, Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And I guess that's it. On that note, thanks for listening, folks. Until next week, Ruxgiving, baby. This is Tim Banal, signing off.